Five. Okay. So we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 2, texts 7 and 8. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Okay, so we can do the, we'll do the first verse responsively. Tasha, Jyakta, Swabhavasya, Agrinher, Maya, Bhajamanasya, Balasheva Stiratmanaha. Tasha, Jyakta, Tasvabhavasya Rinner Maya Vanaukasaha
Rinner Maya Vanaukasaha
Tasvabhavasya Rinner Maya Vanaukasaha
Rinner Maya Vanaukasaha
Balasyevastiratmanaha
Balasyevastiratmanaha
Atasya chakta swabhavasya
Atasya chakta swabhavasya
Rinirmaya vanakasaha
Rinirmaya vanakasaha
Bhajantam bhajanmanasya
Rinirmaya vanakasaha
Rinirmaya
Bhajantam
bhajamanasya
Balasyeva sthiratmana
Balasyeva sthiratmana
Tasya tyaktya svabhashya
Tasya tyaktya svabhashya
Rinirmaya vanakasha
Rinirmaya vanakasha
Bhajantam bhajamanasya
Bhajantam bhajamanasya
Balasyeva sthiratmana
Balasyeva sthiratmana
Tasya tyakta svabhavasya
Tasya tyakta svabhavasya
Rinirmaya vanakasha
Rinirmaya vanakasha
Bhajantamanasya
Just read the second verse too. Matchula bina grivasya murina radirenavai asrikriyam tarpayashe brataram megatavyataha. So you can repeat. Tasya.
Tasya.
Of him the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Of him the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Jyakta Svabhavasya,
Jyakta Svabhavasya,
who has given up his natural position,
who has given up his natural position,
of being equal to everyone, Grinnehe, most abominable, Maya, under the influence of the illusory energy,
Vanaukasaha,
behaving exactly like an animal in the jungle.
Bhajantam.
Unto the devotee engaged in devotional service. Bhajamanasya. Being worshipped. Balasya.
A child.
Eva.
Like.
Astira atmanaha, who is always restless and changing,
whose neck,
Purina,
profuse,
Ruderena,
by blood,
Vai,
indeed,
Ashrikpriyam, who is fond of blood. Tarpayeshe, I shall please. Bhraturam,
brother.
May,
my.
Gatavyataha,
becoming peaceful myself.
So, translation: the Supreme Personality of Godhead has given up his natural tendency of equality toward the demons and demigods. Although he is the Supreme Person, now influenced by Maya, he has assumed the form of a board to please his devotees, the demigods. Just as a restless child leans towards someone, I shall therefore sever Lord Vishnu's head from his trunk by my trident, and with the profuse blood from his body, I shall please my brother, Hiranyaksha, who is so fond of sucking blood. Thus shall I too be peaceful. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The defect of the demoniac mentality is expressed in this verse very clearly. Hiranyakasipu thought that Vishnu also becomes partial, like a child whose mind is not steady or resolute. The Lord can change His mind at any time. Hiranyakasipu thought, and therefore, his words and activities are like those of children. Actually, because the demons are ordinary human beings, their minds change, and being materially conditioned, they think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is conditioned also. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter, text 11, Avajananti mam mudha manushim tanam ashrutam. Fools deride me when I descend in a human form. Demons always think that Vishnu can be killed. Therefore, being absorbed in thoughts of Vishnu's form to kill him, at least they have the opportunity to think of Vishnu unfavorably. Although they are not devotees, their thinking of Vishnu is effective, and thus they generally attain Sayuja Mukti, that's merging. Because the demons consider the Supreme Lord an ordinary living being, they think that they can kill Lord Vishnu as one might kill an ordinary person. Another fact disclosed herein is that demons are very much fond of sucking blood. Hiranyakasipu accused the Supreme Lord of having a restless mind like that of a small child who can be induced to do anything if simply offered some cakes and laddus. Indirectly, this indicates the true position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who says in Bhagavad Gita, in the 9th chapter, text 26, Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya pranashati. Taraham bhakti. They are in love with the Supreme Lord. They do not eat anything without offering it first to the Lord. The Lord does not hanker for a small leaf or flower. He has enough to eat. Indeed, He is feeding all living entities. Nonetheless, because He is very merciful and is bhakta vatsal, very favorable to the devotees, He certainly eats whatever they offer Him with love and devotion. This quality should not be misjudged to be childish. The highest quality of the Supreme Lord is that He is bhakta-vatsala. In other words, He is always extremely pleased with His devotees. As for the word maya, when used in reference to the dealings of the Supreme Personality of God and His devotees, this word means affection. The actions of the Lord to favor His devotees are not disqualifications, but signs of His natural affection. As for Rudira, or the blood of Lord Vishnu, since there is no possibility of severing Lord Vishnu's head from His body, there is no question of blood. But the garland that decorates Vishnu's body is as red as blood. When the demons achieve Sayuja Mukti and leave behind their sinful activities, they are blessed by Vishnu's garland, which is red like blood. After attaining Sayuja Mukti, the demons are sometimes promoted to the Vaikuntha world, where they receive the reward of the Lord's garland, prasad. So, Om Ganati Madandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Meditam Yena Tosmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So it's very important. Verse and description by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, and there's several points I want to make about this. First point is that the goddess of learning, Saraswati, has taken the words of Hiranyakashipu, which are in criticism or criticizing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and actually turned it into praise, as we see in Srila Prabhupada's purport. You know, it says that, for example, that the Supreme Lord is assuming the form of the board to please his devotees, the demigods. He takes that as an accusation by Hiranyakashipu, but the goddess of learning takes it as praising, because the Supreme Lord, what we call ontological position. For example, we find in the description of Srimati Radharani's transcendental qualities that one of her transcendental qualities is that she's always able to control Krishna by her devotion, as she keeps Krishna wrapped around her little finger, as they say. And if we look at the qualities of pure devotional service listed by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti quality, of course, is devotional service relieves one from all types of distress. Does anyone remember the other qualities? No one? It's all auspicious. What's the next one?
She's very cunning.
What?
She's cunning.
No, we're talking about pure devotional service, the qualities of pure devotional service.
It derives liberation.
Yeah, devotee derives liberation. One gets transcendental happiness. We got four of them, and then the last two.
Krishna, the last one.
No, tell me the next to the last one. Rarely achieved.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes, rarely achieved, and the final one is it's the only means of attracting or controlling Krishna. So a pure devotee, we're talking about pure devotees, not me or any of us, probably, maybe some of you in the room, like Keshav, may be a pure devotee. But, pure devotee of tennis. So, if someone is a pure devotee, they actually control Krishna by their devotion. And Prabhupada makes that point specifically in the Gita, where Krishna says, Konteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashati. That Krishna says to Arjuna, declare it boldly that my devotee will never perish. And Prabhupada in his purport says, why is Krishna asking Arjuna to declare it boldly? And the reason being is that people may not believe Krishna. Why may not believe Krishna? Why do they distrust Krishna? Because Krishna is sometimes like a restless child. If you read the Mahabharata, or if you read the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, specifically dealing with the Vrindavan pastimes, you see that Krishna is very tricky. I mean, for example, he goes up to Duryodhana. When Duryodhana is just trying to do something innocently and become invulnerable by having his mother look at his body at the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, and Krishna says to him, you should cover yourself. And in the middle section of the body, because it's not appropriate for you to be naked in front of your mother. And he does that, and because of that, the middle section of his body becomes vulnerable. In other words, able to be smashed. Mm-hmm. And Bhimsen later on smashes the middle section of Duryodhana's body, and against the laws of combat with maces. But anyway, he does it. So Krishna is very tricky. So, in order for people to trust Krishna, you have to have a devotee saying something rather than Krishna saying something. and because Krishna will follow the order of his devotee. I mean, that's very good for us too, because his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, has guaranteed that we'll go back to Godhead if we chant our rounds and follow the process of Krishna consciousness throughout this lifetime. Now, that that is sort of a shortcut to the normal process. The normal process is Bahunam Janmanam Ante Janavam Bam Prapajate Vasudevam Sarvanuti Samahatsu Hatma Sudurva Baba. That after many, many births and deaths, one can come to the point of being Krishna conscious, isn't it? Bahunam Janmanam Ante, after many, many births and deaths. Vasudeva could understand that I am everything. What does it mean to understand I'm everything? Same thing as that verse, which is my favorite verse in the Bhagavad Gita, in the sixth chapter, text 30, that I've spoken about yesterday, Yomam Pashati Sarvatra, to see Krishna in everything and everything in Krishna. That means, of course, not that Krishna is directly the table, but when we see the table, we remember Krishna because it's his energy. And it's meant to be used in his service. Just like if you see someone's shoes or clothes or whatever, you remember the person. For example, if you go to Vrindavan, in Prabhupada's quarters, you'll find many of the items that Srila Prabhupada utilized. And just by seeing them, you feel connected to Prabhupada. And of course, they do have spiritual potency too. But at the same time, because of the connection. So if one is Krishna conscious, whatever they see, even if they see a Bollywood movie, they see it connected to translation of that.
Whatever appears to be sinful, there's no reverse to me. Is my illusory.
Is my illusory energy, which is like a reflection that appears in darkness.
Yes.
So in other words, even if we see someone in Maya, a lot of people, now we're talking about Mahamaya now, not Yoga Maya. Even if we see someone in the illusory energy of the Lord, we see not only do we see Krishna, we see the jiva souls, Mami Vamsa, Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta, Sanatana. The jiva soul is part and parcel of Krishna. The illusory energy is Krishna's energy. It's an expansion of the illusory energy or the yoga maya, which is the illusory energy of the spiritual realm. So, in other words, that's how we see Krishna in everything and everywhere. So, if one is seeing Krishna in everything and everywhere, that's a description of a pure devotee. And a pure devotee has no other desire than to please Krishna. That's really what controls Krishna. That's what it means to be a pure devotee. A pure devotee, you know, sometimes people think a pure devotee means someone who basically talks to Krishna all the time or sees Krishna, like, dancing, right, you know, whatever, dancing in front of him, or sees the Brahmajyoti or whatever people think about pure devotee. But a pure devotee means one who simply desires to please Krishna, and that's shown in the last chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Radharani says that even if Krishna, you know, Radharani, everybody knows who Radharani is, said if Krishna wants and beg for her to associate with Krishna, that's amazing, isn't it? I mean, where is that lady who is so, like, devoted to her husband? Who is... I'm not going to ask any of you ladies that. So, who would say that if my husband wants to associate with a young girl or whatever, I will go and serve that young girl. The guy should have a divorce, you know. That's he starts to think like that. So... But then the example is given in the Puranas of one lady who was like Radharani. And this is in the Markandeya Purana, actually. This lady had a husband who had leprosy, and her husband really wanted to associate with a prostitute. Not such a good idea. But anyway. And so what happened is that she went to work for the prostitute, the lady, the wife of the man who had leprosy. And prostitute eventually, I guess, you know, it takes a pretty associate with her husband. Now, I'm not suggesting that you should all do that. That would be a bad idea in this earth planet. So anyway, so the prostitute agreed. And then what happened is that the lady said to her husband, okay, it's time to go see your girlfriend, prostitute. And on the way to see the prostitute, the man realizes, wow, my wife is chaste. Forget about this stupid prostitute. So he has a good realization. And then on the way back, walking back home, he happens to accidentally touch Markandeya Rishi. And Markandeya Rishi is really upset. You know, I'd be upset too if a guy with leprosy touched me. I mean, I don't know if I'd curse them, but I'd immediately jump in the Ganges, take a bath, go to a doctor, take some injections or something like that. And Markandeya Rishi curses this guy to die before the sun rises the next day. And his wife says, it's all right, honey. I'll make sure the sun doesn't rise the next day. And she stops the sun from rising. She's so powerful. So I'm not saying we should imitate this lady, but that's the power that a devotee has in relationship to Krishna. And specifically, Srimati Radharani has that in relationship to Krishna. I mean, she's more powerful than Krishna. Not that she's stronger than Krishna. It's not described that, you know, Srimati Radharani has strength, she's lifting up all the planets like Krishna does with the plenary portion, the Seshanag. It's not like that. But she controls Krishna, and that way she's more powerful. You know, who is more powerful? The strong man or the person who controls the strong man? The person who controls the strong man. So by her devotion, that pure devotion, that willingness to basically, you know, another story is willingness to go to hell to please Krishna. You know, there's the story of the, you know, the headaches, that Krishna had a headache. He asked all of his devotees, or Narada Muni was asking all the devotees for the dust of their feet, which was the medicine to cure Krishna's headache. And all the devotees refused because they did not want to go to hell. I mean, I don't know if I would agree, you know. Can you give the dust to your feet to Krishna? No way. And then, of course, the gopis immediately agreed. And Narada Muni said to them, aren't you afraid of going to hell? And they said, no, let us go to hell. But we want Krishna's headache to be relieved. So this is pure devotion. And this pure devotion actually controls Krishna. This is the point we're making here. That controls Krishna. So Hiranyakashipu's accusation is completely accurate. However, he's not understanding that point. What he's doing here is something called Atmavat Manyate Jagat. Does anyone know what that means?
It's like, if I'm a fool, I think everyone else...
Yeah, well, you're projecting. It's called projection. Like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I am finding fault in others because I myself am pockmarked with the same fault. You understand? So that's how we identify faults in others. You're angry, you're lusty, you're crazy. And, you know, we say that and actually it reflects on us. You know, like one finger points at someone and 10 fingers point back at you. So Atmavat Manyate Jagat is really an interesting concept, because it means that when we see someone doing something, we are thinking that that person is doing that particular activity for the same reason that I would do that activity. You know, for example, let's take Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda is known as the Avadut. Avadut means like the wind. In other words, he doesn't follow any rules and regulations. You know, one day, you know, he's Avadutta Goswami, you know, he didn't formally take sannyasa. The next day, he gets married and proposes to some girl, you know. And, you know, it's pretty unusual, isn't it? Or Lord Nityananda, there's a description in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, how Lord Nityananda, because he's so opulent like that. And you may be thinking, like, if I mean, for example, if I saw one of you, let's say, Neela Madhava come one day with jewels on, or, you know, with a Rolex watch or something. Let's forget about the jewels. Let's talk about a Rolex watch or the iPhone. There's a special iPhone that was $10,000. Deja, that means if you project your own concept of reality on Lord Nityananda, that's very offensive, because you're thinking, you know, he's wearing his jewelry just because he's a sense gratifier. Or we have the story, Pundarik Vidyaniti. There's another story like that. Like Pundarik Vidyaniti, he was an incarnation of Vishubhanu, Radharani's father. And Gadadhar Pandit was brought by Mukunda, his friend, to see Pundarik Vidyaniti, because he was told Pundarik Vidyaniti was a great Vaishnava. And Pundarik Vidyaniti is sitting on his four-poster bed, you know what a four-poster bed is, with silk sheets, hair that's slicked back with oil, chewing on betel nut, like that, you know. And Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, or it wasn't Goswami at that point, but Gadadhar Pandit takes one look at him and he thinks, phew, this guy's just an abject materialist. You know, what kind of devotee is that? I mean, Mukunda's, you know, a little bit too liberal for me. And Mukunda, understanding Gadadhar Pandit's mentality, he begins to chant a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam that manifests Krishna's compassionate quality. And then this Pundarik Vidyaniti goes into basically a trance. He kicks apart the bed, his head gets all messed up, and he goes unconscious, you know, which is called a vyabhachari bhava, you know, uncontrolled emotional state, intermittent state that devotees experience. And Gadadhar Pandit understands, I've been projecting the material mentality, and basically I better rectify myself by taking initiation from it. So we do this all the time when we're criticizing others. And nowadays, of course, it's very popular on the internet. Everybody, not everybody, but many people are projecting and criticizing others, not understanding how people who are so-called the periphery about ISKCON criticizes sometimes the gurus or whatever, saying, you're just doing this activity because you want to enjoy profit, adoration, distinction. It's not like that. Actually, you get to be a guru, it's like a psychologist working 24 hours a day, you know, without pay, you know. It's just a, can you imagine that, you know? It's not that, you know, we enjoy, just like someone presents a big plate of prasadam before me, like here or wherever we go, like Fiji one time, there's 2,000 preparations for my Vyas Puja. People thinking, wow, he's enjoying it. But actually, it was torture. Because you couldn't really enjoy it when you have 2,000 preparations. You had to please everybody by eating every preparation. I mean, it's like a bad dream, a nightmare, basically. So, don't tell the devotees that. So, 2,000 in Lambasa. Lambasa, they have the greatest devotion. Anyway, at least they show it. I can't say. So anyway, the people project it. So here's exactly the point I'm making, is that Rani Kashipu has actually projected his own mentality upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, he's praising by the mercy of the Goddess of Learning, but he says, the Supreme Person towards the demons and demigods. Well, what has Hiranyakashipu done? You know, if he's saying this is a fault for not being equal, well, hell, you know, he's more at fault than anyone else, right? Why is that? Because he's taking his family relationship as all important, understanding that his brother was sucking blood. You know, come on, Hiranyakashipu, get real here, you know. That who is partial? You're completely partial. Krishna is not, in a higher sense, because that's one thing. If you have less devotion, you know, yetamam, prapajante, tamsataiva, pajamyam, then you get a different result. But just like if you're working in a workplace and your salary is based, or your pay is based on how many sales you make, like if you're a salesman or something like that. Your commission is called. Many people have a commission-based income, right? Just like if you work for Nimananda, you just give them a salary. But if you give a commission, they get more incentive to do more. If you don't give a commission, they just like try to get away with the minimum.
We do it the production manager.
Production manager. How much you can produce in a day. Yeah, that's good. So,
bonus.
Well, bonus or commission. Commission, like salesmen, they work on commission. So, anyway, so obviously if someone works on a commission, they're going to work harder. So certainly Hiranyakashipu is being influenced by his bodily connection with his brother. And the Lord is not being influenced by bodily connection. Because Krishna says he's equal to everyone. Samaham, sarvabhuteshu, name dvesho, stinapriyaha, he says in the Gita. I'm equal to everyone. I don't have any enemies. I don't have any friends. No, Krishna's equal. I mean, Krishna doesn't discriminate according to family or race. He says, whatever one's background, whether one is man or woman or king or saint, you know, Brahma Bandhu, whatever, yepi anti param gatim, they can approach the supreme destination. So where is it that Krishna is actually biased based upon some mundane consideration? He's biased, but everyone has equal rights. You know, I was just reading about one temple in India, where they didn't allow women to come in the temple. They didn't have equal rights. And the Supreme Court just ruled that women have to be able to come in the temple. Or there's another temple, of course, Jagannath Puri, which you all know about, which I don't have equal rights to go in the temple. So, you know, I tried to bribe my way in one time. And they said, give me the money first and then we'll talk about it later. And I said, forget it. Let me go in and I'll give you the money. And it didn't work. So even the Supreme Court recently has ruled on the Jagannath Temple, but who knows whether they'll follow or not. You know, people don't follow these rules. So, but Krishna's equal. He doesn't care what race or language you speak or how old you are. I mean, look at Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, Narada Muni, they were just like little kids. What's your excuse, Keshav? like, so Dhruva was very determined, Narada was very determined, he's the son of a maidservant. These are all little children. And then Krishna doesn't discriminate. And even Krishna likes old people. People with old bodies. I mean, look at the mercy he gave to Ajamil. That's really compassion. All that Ajamil did was call his son Narayan. I mean, how can you accuse him of being impartial, like a rascal? And, you know, someone cries out Krishna's name, you know, and they get Krishna's mercy. So, therefore, Hiranyakashipu is the real one who's partial. Based upon bodily consideration, just thinking of his brother not being concerned with anybody else, that's the ultimate impartiality, right? Actually, there's one religion where they believe the only people who go back to, and it's limited, anyway. They're called the people think they're the chosen people. That's the Jewish religion, actually. This is crazy, partiality. And so, and then he's accusing the Lord of doing something to please his devotees. Well, he's doing something just to please his brother. And his brother's dead, so what the heck anyway? He says, just like a restless child. Well, Hiranyakashipu's acting like a restless child. Like a spoiled brat. So, anyway. So what he's accusing the Lord of, externally, is actually goes back to him, and he's doing the same thing. So, anyway, so these are some of the points. So, yeah. There's other points here, but any questions or comments? Questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues? No? Complaints? No?
Apart from this subject, you were in Bhagavatam. Why was it in Bhagavatam? Because why I'm asking this sort of a question, like, that it's a pitta-pakshitik like that. We have discussed it before.
Yeah.
But in Bhagavatam it also mentions, in 10-7,
yeah.
I think text 19, it doesn't give any paper.
Where, okay, what is it? What is the chapter? Do you remember?
Chapter 14.
Text 19. You go to it. That's the chapter on ideal family life. Not recommended for sannyasis. Anyway, so that's a joke. An intelligent person should be satisfied with eating prasad or with performing the five different kinds of yajna pancha shuna. That doesn't have anything to do with it.
I think it's 7-14-19.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. A brahmana who is sufficiently rich must offer oblationships to the forefathers during the dark moon fortnight in the latter part of the month of Bhadra. The ashrama. So, of course, this is Bhadra right now, but somehow or other, Bhadra Purnima, of course, was the day of giving out books. So, yeah. Oblations to the forefathers, but the way of doing that is you feed the brahmanas. There's a whole system on it. You offer it to Krishna. Well, you get, first of all, you offer prasadam.
So whether they have taken bath in a dog, family, or whatever.
Yeah, you do.
For example, now we can see totally full of canine food and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that means someone is doing and he's getting the benefit. So Krishna is just giving his message.
Yeah, just like after someone passes away, generally we have someone sponsor a feast in the temple or do some devotional service. But it's not that the person, like people think the forefathers come down to the earth planet like that. They don't. Participated in some of these ceremonies too, where the prasadam, there's certain types of prasadam, which is usually some kheer and things like that, that are offered to Krishna. And the Brahmin who is performing that ceremony for his forefathers, he takes his Brahmin thread and switches it from one side to the other, from left to right. And then after that, then they feed the best of the Vaishnavas. And that's, there's no saying that it's, that one stops doing one's regular activities during that time.
There's no
purport there. No. I'd have to consult the purport of Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, which I have, to see if he says anything. So I'll remember that, 7-14-19. Okay. Okay, good question. So any other questions or comments?
Can you do rituals during that time?
Yeah, it never says stop anything. You do. It never says here, nor is there any verse that you stop doing regular devotional service during that time. The only time you stop, let's say, deity worship would be during an eclipse. But you still continue chanting. Chanting, but deity worship, deity should not be touched, and any like prepared foodstuffs that are not offered have to be thrown away after the eclipse.
You done before
that. Yeah. You have to eat before the eclipse. You can't eat during the eclipse. You're not supposed to sleep during the eclipse. You're not supposed to do anything but chant the Lord's holy names. Yes,
Keshe. What if the eclipse happens at night?
You wake up and you chant Hare Krishna.
Oh,
Right? You chant Hare Krishna at night. I mean, what's the problem?
Yeah. You said only when the eclipse you can do deity worship or anything. What about when somebody passes in their family?
Well, there's different rituals.
But can you open the deities?
Well,
not the very day.
Not the very day. No, I would say after, as a Vaishnava, there's no... All right, here's the answer. As a Vaishnava, there is no period of contamination. However, if you are living in a culture where people will criticize, don't do it. Whatever the culture states where you are. You know, if it's in South India, it's a different amount of days. In North India, it's a different amount of days. Follow the culture. Don't disturb people's minds. But a Vaishnava doesn't have that contamination. The family does not become contaminated of a Vaishnava. Or if you're Vaishnavas or performing Vaishnava activities, your family does not, you do not become contaminated by a death.
But the Brahmas, they are contaminated for 12 days.
Yeah, for 12 days. But the Vaishnavas are not actually contaminated. There's no question of contamination. But if you're living in a particular culture, yeah, you have to observe that. So the people are not critical or disturbed by your activities.
So only the Vaishnavas are contaminated?
The Vaishnavas never contaminated.
Their whole family as well?
Well, if the family is not Vaishnavas, they're contaminated. You know, Om Apavitra Apavitra Va Sarva Vashtam Gatopi Va Yakspared Pundarikapsam Savaya Avyantura Shuchi Shri Vishnu Shri Vishnu. And that means, whether pure or impure, if one remembers the lotus-eyed Lord, Pundarikapsam, then one, you know, one could reach the transcendental destination. In other words, one isn't contaminated. Yeah.
Previous point is vice versa true if you're a Vaishnava. Following all the chanting and the bhakti ceremony, you still have to do the pindasana.
Technically, no. Because every activity you're doing is to please the Lord. However, if you're in a society, you should do it. Like we find Advaitacharya did it, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu certainly performed it, Lord Chaitanya went to Gaya to perform Pinda at the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. So he was following a particular society. And what's recommended here are ideal family life injunctions too. So if one is a sannyasi, you don't do those activities. A sannyasi is not supposed to do Pinda. When Lord Chaitanya did it, he was a householder. When Advaitacharya did it, he was a householder. But a sannyasi is actually not permitted to do these activities. Because he's serving Krishna 24 hours a day, hopefully.
They're aloof.
These are, you know, this is a chapter about ideal family life. A sannyasi should not have ideal family life.
But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did it for Haridas Thakur.
That wasn't Pinda. He performed the ceremony, the funeral ceremony. Pinda is something different. Yeah. You know, I'll go to a funeral and glorify a devotee.
Well, in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asked Krishna.
Yeah.
I think chapter first that Indoda Kriya is described about.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whether one should do or not.
Yeah, and Arjuna should certainly do because he's a grahasta. But
he says that if one does not perform, the forefathers, they dwell in hell.
Yeah. Well, no, Arjuna gives that argument.
Yeah, put that argument.
That's Arjuna's argument. Mm-hmm. But Krishna says, you know, he uses an argument not to follow Krishna. That's not, you know, that's not Krishna's statement. That's Arjuna's statement. You know, he also says, you know, if all the men are killed, there'll be so many, you know, ladies without husbands, there'll be unwanted progeny. So these are Arjuna's statements, which are utilized as an excuse. And Krishna says, anyway, you know, you have to do your prescribed duty. And so anyway, I mean, getting back to the point, the sannyasi doesn't have to do those things. But we go to funerals and we pray, chant for the people, but certainly I would not do pinda. It's just not appropriate for me to do.
They have detached me, so there's no
pinda. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's no question, because the sannyasi is dead. You know, to society, it's like society death. So there's no funeral.
Even I think so, if a sannyasi passes away, or...
Yeah.
Even one shouldn't perform pindar kriya for this.
No, no, no. No one should perform pindar kriya for me when I go away. That would be terrible. Because I'm not going to Petri Loka. I don't want to go to Petri Loka. Maybe you do. I don't. I want to go back to Godhead, or at least come here to serve Prabhupada, not to go to Petri Loka. That would be hellish. Just to go, you know, go on vacation. So, any other questions? Actually, we have a lot to do today. So let's end. We'd like to welcome the New Zealanders who have come. Come to join us, Govinda, Nimananda, the biggest businessman in New Zealand. I both business people.
two places. Govinda, probably has 2 places. Yeah, New Zealand.
Yeah. The biggest yogurt distributor in New Zealand. Pretty good, isn't it? And his nice family and everything like that, right? I think you all know Nimananda, right? Some of you do. So, and Govinda has a very nice family, nice children, Krishna conscious children. And he plays the guitar great. Did you bring your guitar with you?
Oh, yeah, in the car.
In the car, so what? We need an amplifier for it. But not here, not now. No, he's not going to play the guitar now. Maybe if you go to one in the evening program. Like when we go to Shudajivas, if you can get to that last program. Oh, that's private?
That's a private.
Oh, okay. What about tomorrow night? We can have the guitar there? Okay, tomorrow, her place.
Tomorrow, okay.
Yeah, you can bring it. If you don't have an amplifier at home or anything.
Oh, I'll get one.
Yeah, if you can borrow it.